Now we go into chapter 11 of Deuteronomy, and the thought continues. Therefore, in view of the fact that you started out with 70 persons going down into Egypt, and now you have a number that are like the stars of the heavens for multitudes, therefore, thou shalt love the Lord thy God, and keep his charge, and his statutes, and his judgments, and his commandments always. This is reason enough here to show the great things that he's done for you right up to this point. This is reason enough to love him. And he tells these two great things. Love him and keep his charge. Love him and keep his charge. Whatever he has charged us to do, whatever he has obligated us to do, we keep. Love him and keep his charge. And then more of the details are, and his statutes and his judgments and his commandments always. You see how it always gets back to this idea of keeping the commandments of God. It's always been that way. Keep the commandments of God. It still is today. The whole duty of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. That's the lesson he keeps driving home. Same lesson. It's so simple, but yet it is the lesson. Now, as he further proceeds in this 11th chapter, in the 2nd verse, it seems that he's talking now to the senior people in this group. Remember, this is Moses standing on the eastern bank of the Jordan River, or in that vicinity, on that plain of Moab, talking to the people just before they go over to possess the land. Only a matter of days now before they cross that Jordan River to go into the land. Moses will have to die before they can do this. But he's given his last-minute instruction to them. He's given the last things he can say on earth to these people. And so now he talks to the senior people in the crowd. This would have to be those that are 50 years of age or older, really, to remember the things he's going to talk about. They were about 10 when they came out of Egypt. They can remember the things that happened, or between the age of 10 and 20. And you know, and know ye this day, for I speak not with your children, which you have not known, and which you have not seen the chastisement of the Lord your God, his greatness, his mighty hand, and his stretched out arm, and his miracles, and his acts, which he did in the midst of Egypt, unto Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and unto all his land, and what he did unto the army of Egypt, unto their horses, and to their chariots, how he made the water of the Red Sea to overflow them as they pursued after you, and how the Lord hath destroyed them unto this day. He said, I'm not speaking to those who have never seen this. I'm speaking to those of you who've seen this happen. And so he begins to relate all the great things that God had done. He talks about the chastisement of the Lord your God. Now, all peoples have to be chastised if they're followers of God. It's just a law of nature and a law of the spiritual world that chastisement goes along with being a child. Chastisement. And God did give his people some chastisement. And he calls this to their remembrance. Remember this. And his greatness, his mighty hand, his stretched out arm, his miracles, his acts, which he did in the midst of Egypt. And what he did to the army of Egypt, unto their horses, to their chariots, how he made the waters of the Red Sea to overflow them as they pursued after you, and how the Lord hath destroyed them unto this day. He destroyed Egypt for the purpose of this people. And as Isaiah said, he gave Egypt for their ransom. Isaiah 43, verse 3. He gave Egypt for their ransom. It's as though he took Egypt to purchase this people with. Egypt didn't have any better purpose at the time than to be used to purchase the people with. And these people here, these seniors that he's talking to, saw this with their own eyes. They experienced it. They witnessed it. They know that it happened. And then he says in verse 5, and what he did unto you in the wilderness until you came into this place. Many things God did in the wilderness. He gave them the manna from heaven. He gave them water miraculously when they needed it. Their clothes didn't wear out. Their shoes didn't wear out. Their feet didn't get swollen or sore. All these miraculous things that God did for them to get them here to this point. Remember this. You saw this. And then he names another thing. Verse 6. And what he did unto Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, the son of Reuben. He refers now back to the time in Numbers 16 when Korah made the rebellion against Moses. And these two sons, who were descendants of Reuben, Dathan and Abiram, they conspired with Korah. And because of this terrible rebellion, God was forced to just have the earth to swallow them up. And he names it in this verse. He describes it. How the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up and their households and their tents and all the substance that was in their possession in the midst of all Israel. Here God protected them from internal strife. He protected them from external strife, the land of Egypt. He protected them from internal strife when there was a sedition that rose up in their own ranks. He guided them through the great wilderness with all the needs that they had. You see how God went to all measures and under all circumstances did the things to get them to this point, to preserve them as an intact nation, as a holy people of God. Look at what he did. And you saw this. You experienced it. But your eyes have seen all the great acts of the Lord, which he did. Still speaking to these senior people now. You've seen all of this. And of course, as they embark on this tremendous task of going in to conquer the land of Canaan, there is nothing that would stand them in any better stead than to remember what God has done for them in the immediate past of their lives. The past 40 years. And further back. Just to remember the great things God had done for them would be a tremendous encouragement. Would bolster up their need for zeal and effort. Because if he'd done it then, he could and he would do it again. So beginning in the 8th verse, he gives them some reasons now to obey. Therefore shall ye keep all the commandments which I command you this day. That's the same thing we've heard before. Keep all the commandments which I command you this day. Number one, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land, whether you go to possess it. Now, one of the reasons for keeping his commandments was so they could be strong and go in and possess the land, so they could be successful in doing what they had to do. You know, that still applies to us today. Whatever our mission in life, whatever our goal in life is, and we all have a goal, we all have a reason, we all have a purpose for being here. We're not just accidents on this earth. God has a reason for putting us here. And if we never discover our reason for being, how miserable, how useless has our life been. But if we're going to go about to doing our reason, our purpose, we can only be successful in it. We can only be strong. We can only go in and possess the land, as it were, if we keep the commandments of God. We all have a reason. I occasionally have a person to mention to me in the hospital, well, I just might as well go on and die. There's no need for me to keep on living like this. But I have to tell that person, now look, this is God's business. God has a purpose for you to be here. However large or however small that is, it's still, there's a purpose for you to be here. And there's no need to talk like that. When it comes time for you to go, then that's God's business too. The second thing here is, and that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord sware unto his fathers to give unto you and to their seed, a land that floweth with milk and honey. So the second reason for doing the commands of God is that once we've gone about the purpose that we've been put here, then we do his commands to prolong our usefulness, to prolong our stay in the land. Because if we start out doing the purpose and then we stop doing the commands of God, we're going to be taken out of the land, so to speak. He's not going to let us stay and enjoy this land flowing with milk and honey if we're not keeping his commandments. Just as he didn't let Israel stay when they stop keeping his commandments. So we keep his commands to be able to be strong and to do his will, and we keep his commands to be able to continue to do his will. We have to continue in them. It's a lifelong job. And we can be deterred from it anywhere along the way if we allow ourselves to not keep the commands of God. So these are the reasons that he gives to obey in the 8th and 9th verses. Now, beginning in the 10th verse, he gives a contrast of Egypt and Canaan. Egypt is the land they came from, in which they were captives, and many of them wanted to go back into the pleasures of Egypt. And Canaan's the land to which they are going. Now notice the contrast of the land. For the land, beginning in verse 10, for the land whither thou goest in to possess it, is not as the land of Egypt from whence ye came out, where thou sowest thy seed and waterest it with thy foot as a garden of herbs. Now Egypt was a land that was really a desert land. It was flat. It didn't have hills and valleys. It didn't have rain. We even have some indication that it never did rain in Egypt. But it had the River Nile. And the Nile River was used to irrigate the land. And so they had to get out there with their shovels and their feet and work and make the water go where they wanted to do. And anything they grew, it was like they were growing a garden. Not like a big crop, but like growing a garden. It required a lot of work and meticulous care to get the water in there to it. He says, the land you're going to is not like that land. But the land whither you go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys and drinketh water of the rain of heaven. Not going to be watered by irrigation like the Nile did. You get your water from the rain of heaven. A land which the Lord thy God careth for. The eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it, from the beginning of the year even to the end of the year. Canaan's a different land. It's a land that has the hills and the valleys. It's a land that depends upon heaven to give its water. It's a more natural type of a land. It's a more natural way to farm and get your produce. Let the water come down from heaven. And the Lord has his eyes. He cares for this land. He has his eyes upon it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. So that he's going to let you have the rain at the right time. And he's going to give you the right kind of season. And you'll have a fruitful, productive land. And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently to my commandment, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil. And I will send grass in the fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Now that's the kind of land you're going to. If you'll love me, if you'll do my commandments, and if you'll serve me with all your heart, with all your soul, I promise I'll give you the rain. I'll give you the early rain when you plant so that the seed will come up and grow and be fruitful. I'll give you the latter rain so that you can go and have the harvest like you should. I'll look over the land. I'll care for the land. Now what a contrast between Canaan and Egypt. Egypt, the man worked with his foot to make the water go in. But in the land of Canaan, God brought the rain. God looked over it. God cared for the land. And he promised them they'd have the rain. There are principles here that I'm sure that we cannot even fathom at this time. Laws of nature and laws of physics and laws of the universe that are applied to this. The farmer understands this better than the city dweller, I'm sure. But we have to depend upon God for these things. And he warned them in that situation in Canaan. That was the more desirable way to be. But then he gives a warning in verse 16. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and that you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. Oh, be careful. Take heed. Don't be deceived into turning aside to other gods. Now, all along the way, there were other gods. There was always this tendency, always this temptation to turn to other gods. But he warns, take heed, do not let your heart be deceived, that you turn aside to other gods, serve other gods, and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, and lest you perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. Now he's also given an equal promise here, that if you turn aside to other gods, if you serve or worship other gods, then he's not going to give this rain that he's promised. He's going to shut up the rain. And that the land yield not her fruit. And then you can perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. And I'm sure every farmer knows this, that it matters not how good his farm is. When it stops producing, he's not going to be able to stay very long. He's going to have to leave when that farm stops producing the things that he has to have. No matter how good it is, it must produce. And of course, there are so many things that can interfere with that production. One of them is not having the rain at the right time. So you can see then what a great warning this is. On the one hand, he's given a tremendous promise. If you love me, if you serve me with your heart and your soul, I'll give you the rain. But if you be deceived, and we do have to be deceived to turn from a God like this, but it does happen. If you be deceived and turn aside to other gods, I'll shut off the rain. I'm going to stop the production of this land, and you won't be able to stay on the good land that I give you. Now that's a principle that applies.